This is the regionalization of oncology care session. Thank everybody for staying. I know it's towards the end of the conference and a lot of people are on the way out already. My name is Bob Sticca. I am the chair of surgery at the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I'm also a surgical oncologist, and I will be one of the moderators. My co-moderator is Nader Mazaway, who is a surgical oncologist at the VA Medical Center in Houston, right?
Yes.
Houston. And he's a co-moderator, and then we'll introduce our panel as we come up. I think everybody realizes that there's been a significant increase in the trends towards regionalization of all kind of medical care, and certainly the field of surgical oncology is one of the areas where it's certainly been a very significant factor. So Nader's going to give a few opening comments, and then we'll go ahead and get started with the panel.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. As people continue to trickle in, I'm actually been really looking forward to this panel. We have a great group of speakers covering a really important topic. I think everyone certainly appreciates that there's been a lot of data over the last decade or two looking at the volume-outcome relationship and how the question of where high-risk surgery should be performed is becoming even more relevant in an era of value-based care with hospital networks and horizontal and vertical integration and just about any other buzzword you can throw in there. So this is really a timely and relevant topic. And as I said, we've really assembled, I think, an outstanding group of speakers to touch on a variety of topics in this field. So I hope you'll all find it really interesting. So our first speaker is going to be introduced by Robert.
Okay, so what we did is we sort of organized this into pros and cons of care and then a couple of special applications of it. So our first speaker is Dr. Sandra Wong. She is a professor of surgery and a surgical oncologist at the Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center in Lebanon, New Hampshire. Sandra.
All right, good afternoon. So I don't have any disclosures for this talk. And I will say that the comment that this has been going on for, a few decades is actually really underselling it. There is a long history of this volume outcomes relationship. And the bottom line is study after study after study, there are higher rates of mortality at low volume hospitals. I think the first appreciable kind of high profile paper was actually published in 1979. And what I put on here was just snippets from the title and headlines. And if you look at the dates on here, you can really appreciate how long this has actually been discussed. But the landmark paper, and I think the one that you're all familiar with and the one that actually gets cited all the time, wasn't published until 2002. And this is the paper from Birkmeyer and colleagues and really kind of started the whole volume outcomes discussion. This was done using Medicare claims and the nationwide inpatient sample. The hospitals that were in the study were sorted by quintiles based on their volume. And the primary outcome in the study was basically postoperative mortality, either in-house or 30 days post-op. And including the six cardiovascular procedures that were included in this, there were 2.5 million cases examined. And you can see that the dates actually represent kind of a dated cohort. But nevertheless, you can see that for these eight cancer procedures, that there is a pronounced volume outcomes effect, clearly more pronounced for some procedures than for others. And I'll point out kind of at the top right-hand quadrant, if you will, esophagectomy and pancreatic resection, nearly 12% difference in operative mortality based on the very high versus the very low volume hospitals. What might be really interesting to note is that for some procedures, there really isn't that much of a volume outcomes relationship. And the other thing to note is what the x-axis is showing. If you actually just kind of look at that, you'll see that for esophagectomy and for pancreas resection, that the very low volume hospitals, and this is hospitals, actually are shockingly low numbers. Less than two esophagectomies gets you into that lowest quintile, and less than one pancreatic resection gets you into that lowest quintile for pancreas resection. So just the magnitude of the effect is pronounced. And I will say that over years, this has been replicated using different data sets and more updated cohorts, and the results are fairly similar, and I'll talk about kind of the time effect on all of this. So over the course of time, and there's this is 15 minutes, so clearly don't have time to go through all of it, but I think a couple of things should be noted. Follow-up studies have definitely added to the evidence base around surgical oncology cases. So this particular study done by the same group actually looked at patient characteristics. And I think the interesting finding about this one is that the volume effect appears to be really important, much more important for your older patients. So if you look at operative mortality comparing low volume to high volume hospitals and the odds ratio of mortality, you can see a pronounced effect for patients older than 65 across the board for these types of cases. However, the results are only statistically significant, interestingly enough, for the same procedures, which is esophagectomy and pancreas resection. There are also other outcomes that can be looked at. I selected this one because I actually think this one is something that, even though this study is now about a decade old, is actually something that we think about today, which is the impact on things like length of stay and how you can save patients' time in the hospital. Again, these results are not consistent across all cases, but you can see in this particular study that looking at patients with prolonged hospital stays, that volume does make a difference, and it makes a big difference for cases like lung, pancreas, esophagus, and prostate cancer resections. So now, what is it about high-volume hospitals? So this particular study actually looked at NCI cancer designation and compared it to a control group of similarly high-volume hospitals. So these are all kind of high-volume hospitals. And even amongst that cohort of high-volume hospitals, you can see that NCI cancer designation actually seems to make a difference. A lot more pronounced for gastrectomy and esophagectomy, but you can still see that there is a pronounced effect across many types of cases. Interestingly, though, this effect was really only seen for perioperative mortality. There doesn't seem to be much of an impact for long-term survival. And I didn't show all six types of procedures here, but you'll just have to take my word for it. Those survival curves completely overlap for all six cases comparing NCI-designated cancer centers to similarly high-volume centers. So there doesn't seem to be much of an effect on long-term survival, but definitely getting out of the hospital is what this study really emphasizes. And I think for individual surgeons, this was also looked at as well. So the impact of an individual surgeon's volume is also noted. That same volume is also much more marked of an effect for esophagectomy and pancreas resection. You can see pretty flat comparisons for lung cancer as shown on this graph here. This study was actually really interesting. What it did was it actually sought to evaluate what proportion of the hospital effect was actually just about the surgeon. And you can see that it ranges, although it was significant for all of the types of procedures looked at. And it ranged from a low of 24% of that hospital effect accounted for by individual surgeons to up to 55% for pancreas. And I think most controversial of all in this particular study was that the mortality rate tended to be higher for low-volume surgeons regardless of the hospital volume. So a low-volume surgeon at a relatively high-volume hospital still had worse results than a surgeon who happened to be higher volume. So those are the data. And we could go on and on. I could talk for hours about all the studies that have been published. But those are sort of the high points as it relates to cancer surgery. So part of what I was asked to do was to talk about pros for regionalization. And I thought what I'd do is take a view of like the reality of regionalization and what that actually means. So one way to look at it is just natural history. You get the data out there, you get surgeons looking at it, you get hospitals looking at it, and what happens? So is there a natural evolution from the first study, remember, published in 1979, as to regionalization? And I'll try to make two points here with some data is that I just think we've gotten better. Technology's gotten better. We've gotten to be safer surgeons, or better processes are in place, we're paying much more attention. And then I think as a result of that, there's just been some evolution of market forces. So same group, actually, John Bergmeier is actually the senior author on this particular study, and actually looks at the same kind of Medicare cohort over time. And you can see that operative mortality with cancer surgery has just gotten better, particularly pronounced for esophagectomy and pancreatectomy, but just kind of over time, surgery's gotten safer, operative death rates have gotten lower. And I think what was provocative about this particular paper was, why is that? And you can see that without kind of any mandates, just kind of data that were published, people talking about this, and we talk about it a lot, is what happened. And what you can see in this particular graph is that trends in median hospital volume, so just kind of like the middle. And you can see that that's totally shifted. So median hospital volumes for cancer surgery, kind of these high-risk types of procedures, has totally increased. So the busier hospitals have gotten busier, and I think the really low-volume hospitals probably stopped doing a lot of these really high-risk, high-complexity cases. So what's another way to look at regionalization? Early on, when this kind of came out, a lot of people said, well, you can't move all the patients. That's an impossible thing to do. Patients won't travel. And the reality of it is that a lot of patients actually just drive by a high-volume hospital to go to a lower-volume hospital. So this really nice study that was done almost two decades ago now actually demonstrated that in the state of California, patients who were undergoing surgery at a low-volume hospital wouldn't have had to drive much farther to get to a much higher-volume hospital. And in fact, like I said, sometimes you would just drive by a high-volume hospital to go to a lower-volume hospital for whatever reason. So I think it demonstrates that while you can't move all patients, that it wouldn't have taken much to move a lot of patients. So now, instead of moving all patients, can processes that lead to better care, kind of processes that are inherent in higher volume hospitals, can those processes be learned and then translated? So this is arguably not a surgical oncology example, but I think a nice example. So I work at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, and you can kind of see our hospital sort of in the middle of this map of northern New England. And this was a cardiovascular example, really around CABGs. And you can see here that, and this study is from 1991, and you can see that the Northern New England Collaborative got together. And what you're seeing are black circles with the crude rate and the darker circles with an adjusted rate. And these are individual surgeons who practice cardiac surgery in northern New England. And you can see a huge variation, almost a five-fold difference in death rate across just these surgeons. And what happened, what was really innovative at the time, much more commonly done now, is that these surgeons just got together. This was a collaborative, and tried to learn from each other. And you can see that the operative mortality rate just declined over time. Data were shared, groups got together, talked about best practices, and everybody wants to do better. And clinicians were learning from each other, and you can see a pronounced and steady decline in mortality rate. This is now starting to happen. There's a lot of statewide collaboratives around multiple types of cancer cases and cancer surgery, and I believe that we'll start seeing this as well. Now, I think, and this is kind of the tricky part of this whole discussion, is mandated regionalization. That hasn't happened here in the United States yet, but it has happened in other countries. And so I adapted this from a recently published study from Annals of Surgery. And you can see that the countries shown here actually have published and enforced hospital minimums. So across the board, you can see here esophagus, pancreas, liver, and rectum. Now, a couple things probably strike you just by looking at this. One is just how random this is. So the arbitrary nature of how these volumes are set have been a point of contention with these countries and with surgeons who practice in these countries. The other thing that kind of came up in discussions with an international panel was just how the hospital minimums were published, but how they were variously enforced. And then in some countries where there are split payers, so there's government hospitals and then sort of more private hospitals, that they can be enforced in some centers and not in others. So it became pretty capricious, and you can see how that would be disruptive in terms of a practicing surgeon who sometimes works in both systems. And I think ultimately there is just some concern that if you're one shy of that minimum, that you're going to expand your indications. So this is pretty sinister, right? You're going to expand your indications to hit those minimums. And so I think there's always that risk of kind of doing the wrong thing because we're kind of being held to numbers. That being said, we haven't seen this in the United States yet. But I think what is probably going to be the next wave is this self-regulation. So instead of waiting for somebody, some agency, to tell us, is that we're going to have to do it ourselves. And so Dartmouth, Hopkins, and the University of Michigan took this minimum volume pledge. This was about 3.5 years ago now, and I got a lot of questions about this. And really what it was that it was controversial to begin with, so believe me, hospital and physician minimums were controversial. But then it became like, well, what are you doing with this? You took this pledge, and what are the actual minimums being set? And I will say the devil's in the details. So I'll share with you what we did. We took a couple of types of cases, the ones that tended to be more volume sensitive. So specific to this particular session, I'll talk about esophagus, lung, pancreas, and rectum. But we also did it for bariatric surgery. We did it for some cardiovascular cases. And then our orthopedic colleagues actually did it for hip and knee replacements as well. So this is what we proposed. We had a hospital target, meaning that hospitals in our system would have to meet this target, and that each individual surgeon working at those hospitals would have minimum standards. So if you actually think about it, they're not that high. These numbers are not terribly high, but admittedly controversial. So how do we enforce this, and what do we do if somebody's missing their minimums? So we put together this job aid, and we call it Privileges Under Focused Professional Practice Evaluation Defined Supervision. So we've been tracking people's cases, and if we get to the point where somebody is falling short, we put together an FPPE. And so the surgeon works with the chair, that'd be me, and we put together a plan, and we present the plan to our credentials committee. And some of the options include direct supervision. So a partner who has higher volumes would be asked to supervise to ensure high quality in the operating room and with postoperative care. With some of the other cases, it's really a lot harder with cancer operations, but for some of the other cases, we've built in modules in a SIM center. It's very preliminary. This is very hard to do. And then case review and tracking for surgeons who are kind of at the cusp of being on that minimum. So I'd be happy to take questions about that. I know it's very controversial, and if we have time, I'd be happy to take the questions. But in summary, I will say that the volume effect in cancer surgery is a no-brainer. The data are very, very strong. However, the underlying causation and mechanisms behind this are a bit less clear. Are there structural issues? Are there process issues underpinning what makes a volume outcomes relationship? And because of that, I will say that action and implementation are less straightforward. But I think we have to act. If we don't do it as surgeons, somebody will do it to us. And so it's really imperative that we have a seat at the table as we're talking about this and how we manage those volumes. Thank you.